For the last 40 years or so, when we talked about software in the business world, we were really just talking about a screen.
Right, a desktop monitor or a phone.
Exactly. You sit down at a desk, you log into a platform, you navigate the little drop-down menus, click the buttons, and you do the work. It's practically muscle memory for anyone who has ever had a white-collar job.
Oh, absolutely.
But I want you to imagine a scenario that just completely breaks that mental model. Think about this quote from the co-founder of Salesforce, Parker Harris. Back in April 2026, he stood up and asked a room full of people, "Why should you ever log into Salesforce again?"
It is still striking to hear that out loud. I mean, you have the architect of one of the largest software interfaces in the world openly questioning the need for anyone to ever look at it.
Right, sounds like a provocation, you know?
Yeah.
Or maybe just a tongue-in-cheek joke to grab some headlines. But it wasn't. It was a reflection of their core strategy moving forward.
Yeah, a massive pivot.
And today we're doing a deep dive into a really fascinating, very business-minded article from Capital Source. It's called Financing the Agent Economy.
And it's a great read.
It really is. The mission of our deep dive today is to basically cut through all that generic AI hype you hear on a daily basis. We want to look at a fundamental structural shift in how work actually gets done. The software you used to open is becoming, well, software that runs itself.
Which is a huge paradigm shift.
It is. And if
Wow.
you are a business owner, a founder, or a financial operator, adapting to this reality is not just, a simple IT upgrade.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because adapting here requires a serious, present-day capital strategy.
Yeah, we are moving into what the industry is calling the headless shift. When Parker Harris asked that question, he was pointing to a future where the interface, like the visual dashboard, the buttons, the menus we associate with software, is just dissolving entirely.
It's becoming invisible.
Exactly. It's becoming invisible because the human is no longer the primary user.
Right, but headless software sounds a bit like an ominous tech buzzword.
It does, yeah. But the mechanics of it change everything about how a company operates. To really understand why the interface is disappearing, we should probably trace how we actually got here.
That's a good idea.
The Capital Source article breaks this down into four distinct eras of software. And tracking this evolution makes the whole headless concept feel, I don't know, like the natural next step rather than some crazy science fiction.
Yeah, let's look back at the first era, which was essentially everything pre-2009. That was the packaged software era.
Oh man, the CD-ROMs.
Right. You purchased a license, someone literally handed you a CD-ROM in a cardboard box, and you installed it on a local hard drive. The fundamental limitation there was that the software lived on one specific machine, and a human being had to physically sit at that desk to operate it.
Which feels like ancient history to us now.
It really does.
Then, from roughly 2009 to 2015, we moved into the App Store era. Everything migrated to the cloud and, onto our mobile devices. But the core dynamic was still exactly the same.
Right, you still needed a human.
Yep. You downloaded an app, and a human operator still had to tap the glass to make it do anything. You were the engine making the software go.
And then came the third era, spanning roughly 2015 to 2024. This was the API economy. Application programming interfaces basically became the standard.
This is where things started talking to each other.
Exactly. This is where things got wired together behind the scenes. Developers could set up a connection so your accounting software could automatically pull data from your point of sale system. The ability to integrate and pass data back and forth became this massive competitive moat for software companies.
So we went from isolated desktop software to mobile apps we still had to click to software that could finally pass notes to other software. Which brings us to the fourth era, the period we are entering right now, from 2025 to 2030, the agent economy.
Right. And in this fourth era, the human is no longer the required operator. AI agents don't just pass notes, they actually take action.
We do the work.
Yeah. They discover other tools, they can evaluate a problem, hire another agent to help them, and spawn a whole swarm of agents to execute a multi-step job. The massive fixed tech stacks that companies spent millions of dollars building, they're dissolving into these fluid capabilities that just assemble themselves on demand.
Let's tie this back to that Salesforce strategy, because it is the perfect case study here. They rolled out something called Headless 360.
Which was a huge deal.
Massive. They essentially took every single capability inside their enterprise platform and made it available as an API, a command line interface, or an MCP tool. And just to clarify how that works, a command line interface is basically a way to bypass the shiny graphics entirely and send raw text instructions straight to the system's brain.
Right, skipping the UI completely.
Exactly. So they launched this with over 60 of these MCP tools and more than 30 ready-made skills. An AI agent can now detect an issue, resolve a complex customer support case, update a sales pipeline, and deploy a change to the database, all without a human ever even opening a web browser.
It is a massive enterprise admitting that the future is headless. The software just does the task in the background. But the really crucial piece of this puzzle-like, the underlying mechanism that actually allows an agent to seamlessly jump between different software ecosystems, is the Model Context Protocol, or MCP.
This is the connective tissue of the whole agent economy. Oh. And to visualize how MCP works, I want you to think about what the bottom desk drawer in your office used to look like about, say, 10 years ago.
Oh, boy.
You had a chaotic, tangled mess of different charging cables.
Yeah, a total nightmare.
You have one specific cable for your phone, a totally different one for your digital camera, maybe some weird proprietary one for your e-reader. Nothing worked together.
A nightmare most people remember very vividly.
And then the tech industry finally aligned and gave us the USB-C cable. One standard port, one standard cable, and suddenly your laptop charger can power your headphones, your phone, your tablet. MCP is essentially the USB-C cable for AI models.
That analogy fits the mechanics perfectly. Think about what a USB-C actually does. It carries both power and data simultaneously without you having to worry about, you know, configuring the internal pins.
Right.
MCP does the exact same thing for artificial intelligence. It allows an agent to pass context and execute commands without a human developer needing to write custom integration code for every single app.
Which used to take forever.
Exactly. Before MCP, if you wanted an AI to read your proprietary inventory database, you had to build a really costly custom bridge. MCP gives any AI model a single standardized way to plug into any tool or data source.
And the adoption of this was wild. Anthropic introduced this protocol in late 2024, and the source material notes that within months, OpenAI, Google, and Microsoft all aligned on this standard.
Yeah, governed through the Linux Foundation.
Right. And to put a number on it, by the end of 2025, there were roughly 97 million monthly SDK downloads for MCP.
Yeah.
And just to define that quickly, an SDK, a software development kit, is basically the toolbox developers download to actually build these connections.
Hitting 97 million monthly downloads in roughly a year is just unprecedented. And because of that standardized USB-C-like connection, agents can seamlessly interact with advanced coding tools. The traditional friction of enterprise integration is just, well, it's evaporating.
So if this standardized headless software is suddenly capable of running the show, who actually benefits?
Right.
We are moving away from a reality where only the massive Fortune 500 companies have the capital to access cutting-edge automation.
Right.
The playing field hasn't just tilted. It feels like it has been completely leveled for Main Street. The exact same frontier-grade AI models powering massive enterprise operations models like ChatGPT, Claude, Perplexity are sitting in the pocket of every single business owner right now for basically the cost of a monthly phone bill.
What's fascinating here is how the capability gap has just collapsed. Historically, there was a massive chasm separating the well-resourced giants from the lower middle market.
Oh, for sure.
If you were a mid-sized operator, you simply could not afford the teams of analysts and developers that a mega corporation had. Today, that gap has narrowed to almost nothing, which completely changes the fundamental economics of running a regional business.
Let's look at a concrete example from the sources to show how this works in practice. Imagine a startup founder who gets handed a dense 40-page financing agreement.
Usually a terrifying moment.
Right. Previously, you would have to send that document to outside counsel, wait a week for them to review it, and pay a massive hourly fee just to understand the covenants you were signing.
Yeah.
Today, that same founder can paste that 40-page PDF into a frontier model. The model maps the clauses against standard market terms, pulls out the key covenants, flags any unusual risks, and provides an attorney-grade read in literally seconds.
And we see the exact same mechanism in financial modeling. A business owner can run a proposed term sheet and complex pricing scenarios through an AI copilot.
Just instant analysis.
Yeah, the model utilizes its massive context window to analyze cash flow impacts at a level that historically required a seasoned full-time CFO.
An owner who could never justify a $250,000 CFO salary and maybe relied on the fractional CFO market can now co-pilot their entire business with an agent that never sleeps, never takes a vacation, and processes complex data instantly.
Exactly.
Fintechs, independent sales organizations, banks, accountants, local consultants, everyone is suddenly holding the exact same hyper-powerful tools at the exact same time.
And that democratization of capability is triggering an absolute earthquake across the broader software industry. It is systematically destroying the traditional moats of the software as a service or SaaS a business model.
Yeah, the article refers to this as a SaaSpocalypse.
It sounds a bit dramatic, but...
But the numbers back it up. For 20 years, the whole SaaS economic model relied heavily on two things: selling individual seats or licenses for every employee and creating massive switching costs.
Right, vendor lock-in.
Exactly. The prevailing idea was that once a company spent a year migrating all their data, mapping their workflows, and training their staff on a vendor system, leaving was so painful and expensive that they would just keep paying the subscription forever.
Vendor lock-in was the foundation of SaaS valuations. But AI agents collapse that moat completely through automation.
Because they can just move the data.
Exactly. When an AI agent can execute a single instruction to migrate your entire operation, the whole dynamic shifts. The agent can look at how your data is structured in platform A, map those schemas to platform B, write the necessary API scripts, and execute the entire transfer overnight while you were asleep.
It's incredible.
When switching costs drop to zero, lock-in evaporates.
We can see this playing out in the public market data, too. The median year-over-year revenue growth for public SaaS companies was sitting around 30% back in 2021. By 2025, that growth had decelerated to just 12.2%.
That is a massive contraction.
In a very short window.
Because value is fundamentally shifting. Businesses are no longer willing to pay for access to software seats, especially when an AI agent doesn't need a seat. They want to pay for completed work. They're paying for outcomes.
Right.
Mark Benioff claimed that AI agents now do 30 to 50% of the work inside Salesforce. Software is shifting from being a tool for the worker to actually taking a share of the labor itself.
And that leads to a very real human impact. The reporting tied roughly 50,000 U.S. white-collar job cuts in 2025 directly to AI. It is doing the work. And the market sees this transition clearly. While traditional SaaS growth is shrinking, the AI agents market is exploding.
Oh, absolutely skyrocketing.
It's projected to hit $52.6 billion by 2030. That's a 46.3% compound annual growth rate.
It's staggering.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. And I want to push back on this premise a little bit.
Sure.
If I am a business owner listening to this right now, you are telling me two things. One, I have access to incredible AI co-pilots for $20 a month. Two, the expensive legacy SaaS platforms are losing their pricing power. So doesn't that just mean running my business is getting cheaper?
Well,
if everyone has the same tools and the tools cost the price of a phone bill, why is this article framing this as a massive once-in-a-generation question about capital? Why do I need a whole new financial strategy if the software basically runs itself and costs next to nothing?
That is the core paradox of the AI revolution, and it is the exact right question to ask. People look at the software interface, you know, the chat window, and think it's incredibly cheap, but they are completely missing the physical and operational reality of what it takes to power those models.
Right, the real world costs.
Intelligence is not magic. It requires an incredible amount of physical infrastructure.
The underlying hardware.
Precisely. The power requirements to train and run these models are just staggering. The International Energy Agency projects that global data center electricity use will reach near 945 terawatt hours by 2030.
Wow.
Yeah. And in the U.S. alone, utilities are planning a $1.4 trillion build-out just to keep the lights on.
Okay, I hear the trillion-dollar numbers, but let me press on this. Let's say I'm listening to this and I run a regional logistics company or a mid-sized manufacturing plant.
Okay.
If Google is spending $1 trillion to build giant server farms in the desert, why does my lower middle market business need a new capital strategy? Isn't that infrastructure build out their problem to finance?
It is their problem to build the massive centralized data centers, yes. But that $1.4 trillion flows directly through the real localized economy.
Oh, I see.
It flows to regional electrical contractors, HVAC companies, local logistics firms moving server racks. If you are in the supply chain of this build out, you need massive working capital to handle the surge in demand.
Right, the ripple effect.
Exactly. And furthermore, for the end user, your regional logistics company adopting AI isn't just about paying $20 for a chatbot. If you want an agent to actively manage your supply chain, route your trucks, and interact with your warehouse robotics, you have to invest in local edge computing.
You have to actually implement it.
Right. You have to digitize your legacy data. You have to hire specialized talent to orchestrate these agents. All of that requires upfront capital today, well before the efficiency gains hit your balance sheet tomorrow.
So it's a massive capital expenditure trickling down to every layer of the economy. And, you know, there are significant policy tailwinds driving this build out right now, too.
There are. We can look at the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which was signed into law in July 2025.
Let's outline how that legislation actually impacts the financials of these companies,
because
it's purely a policy driver here, but it's important.
Exactly. Just looking at the mechanics of the legislation, it did two massive things for the domestic AI sector. First, it restored immediate expensing for domestic research and development.
Let's break down how that works in practice, because immediate expensing sounds like a dry accounting term, but it has huge cash flow implications.
It does. Previously, businesses had to amortize their R&D costs. That means if you spent, say, $1 million developing an AI workflow this year, you couldn't deduct that full $1 million from your taxes immediately.
Right. You had to spread it out.
Yeah. You had to spread the deduction out over several years, which meant paying higher taxes today and restricting your current cash flow. Immediate expensing allows a business to deduct the entire cost of domestic R&D in the year it occurs. It is a direct, immediate cash flow advantage for building AI in America.
So it's essentially a use it or lose it incentive to invest in development right now. And what was the second major change?
The second mechanism expanded the Qualified Small Business Stock Exclusion, or QSBS. The legislation expanded this exclusion to the greater of $15 million, or 10 times the initial investment basis.
Meaning, if a founder or an investor builds a qualified domestic AI startup and eventually sells it, they can shield a massive portion of those capital gains from federal taxes, up to $15 million, or 10 times what they put in.
Exactly.
It is a structural incentive to build, scale, and exit quickly.
When you combine a tax environment that aggressively rewards domestic innovation with a multi-trillion dollar physical infrastructure build-out, the reality becomes really clear. AI adoption is not a passive event. It is an active, present-day investment decision.
Which brings us back to the core premise of the Capital Source article. Capturing this technological shift requires real money.
Yes, it does.
You need capital to fund the localized infrastructure, to hire the talent, to buy the equipment and inventory, to fulfill the demand these agents generate. You need working capital to bridge the timeline between the heavy investments you make today and the unlocked revenue you'll see next year.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this capital requirement spans across virtually every sector. A healthcare tech company needs capital to scale a compliant data platform so agents can process claims. A consulting firm needs capital to completely retool how they deliver services.
Everyone needs it.
The operational phase shift is universal, and so is the need to finance it.
And this is where the traditional lending models start to, well, break down. The old school banks are still using underwriting playbooks from the 2010s. They look at a massive investment in headless software or a complete overhaul of a company's data architecture, and they just don't know how to model the ROI.
They're trying to fit an AI-era business into a legacy product box.
Exactly. And that is the specific gap Capital Source is stepping into. They are structured to finance growth stage and lower middle market businesses across these AI-touched verticals. Manufacturing, IT, health tech, supply chain, professional services.
Right.
They understand that evaluating an AI infrastructure loan requires a totally different lens than evaluating a traditional commercial real estate loan.
What really stands out about their playbook is that they aren't just funding companies operating in the AI era. They are operating like one themselves.
That's a great point.
Their deal desk utilizes the exact same intelligent technology we have been dissecting today. They use agents to ingest and read the full credit story of a business, underwrite swiftly, and design capital structures based on actual cash flow dynamics and growth plans.
It creates a really fascinating dynamic between the lender and the borrower. Think back to our earlier example where a startup founder uses an AI agent to analyze a 40-page financing agreement in seconds to uncover all the covenants.
Right. The founder getting an instant attorney-grade read on the terms.
Legacy lender relying on information asymmetry might view that capability as a threat.
Yeah.
But Capital Source views a more informed borrower as a fundamentally better borrower.
Yeah, they actively welcome that level of scrutiny.
Because their underwriting is based on the actual business reality, they want transparency. They are prepared to explain the why behind every single metric in the term sheet.
So what does this all mean for the person listening right now?
Yeah, what's the bottom line?
If you are running a business, acting as a CFO, or advising a company, it means the timeline for adaptation has compressed completely. In AI time, the market moves at breakneck speed. The businesses that secure the capital to fund their operational shift today are the ones poised to capture massive market share.
The window of opportunity to leverage this technology as a competitive advantage is open right now, but it is definitely not permanent.
No, it's not.
If you wait for the old financing playbooks to catch up to the reality of the aging economy, your business is going to be left behind. You need a capital strategy that actually moves at the speed of the technology.
Absolutely.
So if your business is building AI-enabled products, modernizing around agentic workflows, or investing in AI infrastructure, Capital Source is currently accepting applications. Apply online or talk to the deal desk.
The capability gap that once separated the massive enterprises from the lower middle market is closing right now for the operators who are willing to invest.
It's a once-in-a-generation restructuring of how a business operates. The software we used to click and manage is stepping into the background and just doing the work. And as we watch the interface dissolve, it leaves us with one critical question to consider about the future of the market.
Yeah, as this new reality takes hold, what happens to the businesses that hesitate today?
Right.
By the time we hit 2030, will the divide between these agent-enabled operators and the legacy businesses still relying on human clicks become an uncrossable chasm? Will the latecomers find themselves permanently locked out of the market entirely?
It is a question every operator needs to answer,
mm-hmm.
and they need to answer it soon. Thanks for diving deep with us today. We'll see you next time.